Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Hawk Blogger Mornings. I am Brian Emhauser, and a fun little weekend we had as the Seahawks did not have to play because they'd already won on Thursday night, and we got to just watch everybody else play their games and sit back and relax. I don't think I've sat and watched that much football in one day in a long time. And if you have not... If you're listening and not tuning in, you're maybe saving yourself, because it's not just Seahawks time. It is playoffs for the Mariners. And yeah, I'm going stash. The mustache for the first time in my life is out. The wife absolutely hates it, which makes it even more funny. But yeah, going to be rocking the stash through the Mariners playoff run. Let's hope it goes all the way through the World Series. I'm doing it for the boys. Hopefully all of you will join me. Let's go. Yeah, it's going to be fun. I sent it to my son today, and he just all caps, "Oh my God." So anytime I can embarrass my family, I am all in on doing it. So bunch of stuff to talk about this morning. I want to start by looking a little bit about what happened this weekend. It's very tempting to get already into the Tampa Bay preview and all that stuff, but we're going to do our normal routine. We'll get to Tail the Tape on Wednesday, and I'll probably publish it Tuesday night or Wednesday morning. And so we'll get to Tampa Bay in more depth. But there was a lot that happened this weekend, and the point of this episode, where we're going to spend a little bit of time, is actually kind of re-racking the Seahawks schedule. And now that we are 4 weeks in, how do we feel about the opponents that are ahead? And I'll share kind of my perspective. I'd love to hear from all of you on this as well. And we'll kind of evaluate, because now we've had 4 weeks of games for pretty much every team the Seahawks will face. Tonight, we've got Denver going against Cincinnati, so Seahawks don't face that. And I think the Jets are playing the Dolphins. Seahawks don't play either of those teams. And oh my God, has there ever been a worse set of Monday night games than tonight? Yikes. The only interesting aspect of Monday night for me is if the Bengals get rolled the way I think they probably will, how much more likely does that make it that the Bengals will listen to offers for Trey Hendrickson? And will the Seahawks be one of those teams that makes an offer? All right, so we'll get into the schedule in a bit, but let's look back before we look forward. The Seahawks entered this week in last place. Well, they were tied. They were essentially last place in the division. They had a 2-1 record. The 49ers were 3-0. They were first place. The Rams were 2-1. The Cardinals were 2-1. And the Seahawks were 2-1. Well, now three teams in the NFC West are 3-1. The Seahawks, the 49ers, and the Rams. The Cardinals are now 2-2. And the 49ers, by strength of beating the Seahawks head-to-head, are technically, you know, the first-place team. Interestingly, the Seahawks are second place because the Rams are currently 0-1 in the conference. They have not yet played a divisional game. They're the only team in the NFC West that has not played a divisional team. That will change this Thursday when the Rams play the 49ers on Thursday Night Football, which... that's going to be an interesting one, and I think there's a lot of ways to look at who you want to win that game or who you're going to be rooting for, but we will talk about that a little bit later. Here's some thoughts about what I saw this weekend. The NFC is wide open. The NFC is wide open. Yes, the Eagles have won, what, like 21 of 22 games. They went in and started to blow out the Bucks, but ultimately it ended up being a close game that they had to hold on to win. That Eagles pass rush is just not the same, because the Bucs were missing a lot of offensive linemen and the Eagles still could not get pressure on Baker Mayfield for much of that game. Doesn't mean that their defense is bad, but there's issues there with the Eagles pass rush. The Eagles cannot run the ball the way they did a year ago. They lost another offensive lineman in Tyler Steen. I don't know how serious it is. I think he sat out the rest of that game. That offensive line is not clearing the same kind of run lanes that it did before. They still are finding ways to win. And I think I don't discount that, but this is not, at least so far, this is not the super team that it was a year ago. The team that they played in the NFC championship game last year, the Washington Commanders, played another game without Jaden Daniels. And you could say, well, I mean, they started Marcus Mariota. What did you expect? Well, Marcus Mariota has played really well. He's played really well. You could argue he's played better than Jaden Daniels this season in his absence. And they still lost to the Falcons. And they got just destroyed on defense. I don't see the story to tell about how the Commanders' defense is going to step forward. I think what was a really, really hard team to beat last year, I think looks like a fringe playoff team. You've got the NFC North, which has like some interesting teams in there. The Lions look great. I think the Lions, to me, might be the best team in the NFC. We'll see, but I love what they've got going on defense. I love what they have going on offense. I think that team is good at in the secondary. It's good in the pass rush. It's good in run defense. It's got a great offensive line. It's got a good run game. It's got a good, like, it is a very good team. So the Lions, for me, they're a team that certainly has something to you know, be excited about, where I think a lot of people thought, hey, they lost Ben Johnson and Aaron Glenn. How are they going to look? Well, so far, I think they've looked really, really good. The Packers. I don't know if you heard, but I was told the Packers were going to go undefeated. Since that time, they are 0-1-1. They managed to nearly lose to the Dallas Cowboys, because this defense, where they traded for Micah Parsons and paid him the most money ever paid to a non-quarterback, gave up 40 points to the Dallas Cowboys. 40. And it was, I don't know if you saw Dak Prescott in overtime or at the end of the game, they got down there so fast. At the end of the game to score a touchdown, it was like 40 seconds, 60 seconds. I mean, it was just, there was no resistance. So that Packers team that looked like the class of the conference, I don't know. Now, they have some reason to be hopeful in that they're offensively, they will get back guys like Christian Watson and Jalen Reed, whatever, at some point. And that will help, but they're not really struggling on offense. They have some offensive line players that have been out, but they put up 40 points. So I don't think the offense is really the issue. They have given up 84 points through 4 weeks. I think that's a little bit different than they expected. We go to the Minnesota Vikings and the Chicago Bears. And the Vikings, I mean, they were absolutely getting smoked by the same Pittsburgh Steelers team that Seattle beat pretty well in Pittsburgh. Now, they made a big comeback at the end. And yes, Carson Wentz is the quarterback. And you can say, well, they'll be better when McCarthy comes back. Will they? Are we sure that Carson Wentz hasn't been actually better than J.J. McCarthy so far? Is J.J. McCarthy going to regain his starting spot? I think he will, and I'm not sure that's going to be an improvement. We will see. Also, that defense that has been their pride and joy I mean, got pretty beaten by that same Aaron Rodgers, DK Metcalf crew without Jaylen Warren, by the way, that the Seahawks bottled up. Then you get into the NFC South and the Tampa Bay Bucks, who the Seahawks are going to play this week. We don't know exactly when because of the Mariners playoff. The Mariners playoffs are going to be going on at T-Mobile Park on Sunday. The exact schedule has not been released. And in any event, when that happens, the Seahawks might start their kickoff a few hours later than the 1 o'clock that it's currently scheduled for. But the Bucs just had a really physical game against the Eagles. It seems like they lost some more players, but we're going to find out about that probably later today. And now they're going to fly back here to face the Seahawks. The Bucs are a really interesting team in that every game I've watched, I've come away impressed with them, especially how resilient they are. And their offense with Baker Mayfield, it just has his identity. It feels like a offense that never stops fighting, that is always dangerous, and you can never count out, no matter what the score. And at the same time, if you look at the Bucs season so far, they have a 0 point differential, meaning they've scored as many points as they've given up. The teams that they have beaten, the Atlanta Falcons by 3 points, by the way, and the Falcons missed a field goal at the end of that game that would have tied it. The Texans by 1 point, and the Jets by 2 points. I'm going to really enjoy digging into that team and trying to look behind the numbers, because if you just watch them play, you're like, this is one of the best teams in the NFC, and they're doing it with a lot of injuries and all that stuff. Great. Like, fine. But at some point, that should lead to separation from inferior opponents. And to barely beat the Jets at home, to barely beat the Texans, and to barely beat the Falcons is not exactly like the most glowing resume for the Bucs. But to their credit, they like came back and made it a game against the Eagles, who are undefeated. So I don't know. The Falcons, who the Seahawks will play, and we'll talk about all these teams in a little bit more depth, but I thought going into the year that their offense would be one of the best in the NFL, and it's had this really weird, like, some weeks it is the best or close to it, and then other weeks it's been a disaster to the point of benching Michael Penix Jr. Well, they had one of the good weeks this week, and they beat the Commanders pretty handily, but mainly because of how that offense is playing. But I'll tell you in a little bit some surprises about that defense that I'm guessing you don't know, and we'll talk about that. Panthers are a disaster, 1-3. And then let's get to the NFC West. It was almost the perfect weekend, wasn't it? It was almost the perfect weekend. The San Francisco 49ers looked like a completely mediocre team against the Jaguars. They looked like the team that they've basically looked like all year, even with Brock Purdy coming back. They were down big, 26-14 to the Jags going into the fourth quarter, ended up making it closer, but Brock Purdy had two interceptions and a fumble on a strip sack that ultimately cost the 49ers that game. And I looked at that defense and, oh my God, this was their first game without Nick Bosa. First time since 2015 that they've had no quarterback pressures in a game. I think it was quarterback hits. This group looks toothless. like, Fred Warner, still Fred Warner. That's kind of it. That's kind of it for that group. So it's not like the Jaguars have a world beater offensive line. It's not terrible, but this was not some crazy, when it wasn't like Trevor Lawrence was getting rid of the ball in nanoseconds. It just was, I thought the Jags just kind of did whatever they wanted. They were able to run against the 49ers. They were able to pass against the 49ers. And we should acknowledge, we'll talk about this when we're looking at future opponents. That says something about the Jags as well. But if you're just looking at the 49ers, I mean, they will get back George Kittle. At some point, they will get back Malik Mustafa. They will get back Brandon Ayuk. But we don't know what's going on with Ricky Pearsall, who left the game with the same knee injury that made him questionable. And he said that there was pain and stability issues for him that forced him to come back out of the game. We'll see. We'll see what's going to go on with their best receiver in Ricky Pearsall. Juwan Jennings once again got banged up. And Christian McCaffrey just, they're giving him the ball a lot, and he is making some plays, but he is not the same player, partially because of what we've talked about on this show, that offensive line led by Trent Williams is not the same. Trent Williams is not the same player that he was over the course of his career, and this has been something that honestly has just been in the makings for a while now. Let's take a look at what Trent Williams' grade was. Oh, they gave him a pretty good grade yesterday. 78.4. Only 69.3 pass block. That's interesting. If we look at where he ranks among all tackles, let's take a look. And if we just look at pass protection, pass block grade. Where is he, man? Maybe I'm missing him already. Oh, there he is. He ranks 17th. He ranks 17th in the NFL in pass block grade. Not great. In case you're curious, Charles Cross ranks 8th, top 10 in pass block grade. So, I feel like the 49ers to me are a paper tiger. I think their schedule is going to allow them to not have to be that good. I'll talk about that in a little bit in terms of current schedule versus future schedule. And they have the easiest of all the teams, the NFC West, looking up or looking forward. But I don't see a team that anybody should be afraid of. I just don't see it with the 49ers. And if you missed it, there was the fun little dust up after it where the head coach for the Jags, Liam Cohen, went after Robert Saleh, the defensive coordinator for the Seahawks, or for the 49ers, I should say, and said, "Get my name out of your mouth." And he used more colorful language than that, but no love lost there. And if you don't know the story, I think Robert Saleh said something about that Liam Cohen is really good at legal sign stealing and that they have to pay attention to details. And then after the game and after that dust up, Kyle Shanahan said that Liam Cohen should just not be so sensitive. Man. God, he's unlikable, Kyle Shanahan. He's so unlikable. So we'll see. I think the 49ers are still going to win a lot of games, but they're not a team that they lost to the Jags. I think they're going to lose some other games that game against the Browns, the Giants, the Bears, that all look like sure wins. I don't know. They're probably still wins. But there's enough weakness in that 49ers group that I have some questions about how those play out. Then the Rams, man, God dang it. Adonai Mitchell has got to be the least favorite player in Seattle this weekend. Forget Indianapolis. It would have been a 76-yard touchdown pass. All he had to do was just keep running and not move the ball. He tried to change the ball from one hand to the other to stretch it out and fumbled it out of the back of the end zone. So not only did the Colts not get a touchdown, but they turned the ball over to the Rams. Huge, huge, huge play. Probably the game-losing play. And then Colts were driving. They scored a touchdown on a long run by Jonathan Taylor. Adonai Mitchell, away from the play, like at least not really affecting the play, pointless holding penalty, pulls back the Colts from a touchdown. They eventually have to punt because it was now, then they were like first and 20, and the Rams get a late touchdown to Tutu Atwell to win that game. So that is frustrating. That's frustrating because the Colts had done enough and should have probably won that game, not comfortably, but they should have won that game. So they didn't. And by the way, that also says something about the Colts, which we'll talk about when we get to the Seahawks schedule in a bit. But the Rams go to 3-1, and the Cardinals, we've talked about. I don't think that team is that dangerous. I do think they'll get healthier, and I think the defense is really good. I think the offense is really limited. But as I kind of look at the division, I think the Rams look like the biggest competition for the Seahawks from a quality of team perspective. I think if you look at the NFC, I mean, I think it's the Eagles, the Lions. I would probably put the Bucks in there depending on how their health is, the Seahawks and Rams. And the Packers are like, you got to put them in there, but I mean, there's some pretty big questions about losing to the Browns and then tying the Cowboys is a not good look. Like, it's a pretty bad look week to week. So that's kind of where, you know, I think the Seahawks, I don't look at the Seahawks and say, man, they don't belong in the conversation with those teams. I don't see it. We'll talk again. We're going to get to the schedule, and that plays a little bit of role here. But the Seahawks are the number one ranked DVOA team in the NFL for the second straight week. And I don't think that's misleading. They are first overall. They're sixth on offense. They're first on defense. And they're second on special teams. It's a very complete team so far. The one thing, if you were talking about what are they not doing, they're defending the run well, they're defending the pass well. They've even started to get pass rush numbers, sack numbers that match their pass rush numbers. Remember, we've talked about that sacks usually eventually follow pressure rate. And so don't get so worried that the Seahawks were low in sacks. Well, if you look now after this week, Seahawks rank 3, 4, 5th in the NFL in sacks. All right. Not so shabby. The only thing that they're not doing well right now is running the ball. They're passing the ball as one of the best passing offenses in the NFL, one of the most explosive passing offenses in the NFL. They have one of the best receivers, one of the best quarterbacks, and believe it or not, one of the best performing offensive lines from a pass protection perspective. Yes, I've seen the Anthony Bradford video. Yes, I've seen it. And I have thoughts on it. I don't know if I'm probably going to get into it today, but I have thoughts on it. But if you're looking at the Seahawks pass protection, the Seahawks rank, I put this out earlier today, where is it? Seahawks rank 10th in pressure rate allowed, 9th in PFF pass block grade, 13th in overall pass block efficiency from PFF, and 9th in sacks allowed. So run blocking, running the ball. That's the one thing that hasn't yet clicked. And if it does, I think it will, by the way, if it does, Seahawks are going to be really, really challenging for teams to beat. So let's keep looking. All right. So I've teased it enough. Let's get into the schedule a bit and look at where kind of things are versus where they will be. If you're just tuning in and you're wondering why I've got this crazy thing growing on my lip here, Mariners are in the playoffs. It's stash season until the Mariners season is over. Hopefully it ends with a World Series title. Until then, you guys are going to be subjected to this little beauty the rest of the way. So I looked at, there's a bunch of different places that have schedule rankings, and I'm going to give you the numbers first, at least the DVOA rankings, but then we're going to get into the games and we're going to look at it together and say, okay, so which of these teams look toughest for the Seahawks to play? And as it stands right now, the Seahawks, let's go through the NFC West. So the Seahawks have the 27th toughest schedule so far by DVOA, meaning the fifth easiest, if you want to think about it that way. Their future schedule is the seventh toughest. All right. And that's just overall. I have personally some questions about how the Seahawks have the 27th toughest so far, because if you look at it, the Seahawks have faced, they have faced the 15th ranked DVOA team. They faced the 19th DVOA team. They've placed the 13th DVOA team. And then I'm sure they've faced the 31st. All right. So facing the Saints drags things down. But I mean, they haven't faced a top 10 DVOA team. That's probably what is causing that low rating or low ranking. All right. So the 27th toughest so far. The Cardinals, that, by the way, that's the easiest schedule so far out of the NFC West by DVOA. The Cardinals have the 24th toughest. And the challenge there is because these other, like the Cardinals played the Seahawks, and the Seahawks are the number one DVOA team in football. So it makes the Cardinals schedule, quote, tougher. They've also played the 49ers and the Saints and the Panthers. So they played the Saints and the Panthers. I'm not sure I would say that the Cardinals have had a tougher schedule than the Seahawks in that regard, but the Seahawks are, you're going to have this when you're the best team DVOA wise, you're going to really affect other teams' rankings. So they're the 24th toughest. The Rams have had the 19th toughest, and the 49ers have had the 9th toughest. So that the 49ers to this point have faced the toughest schedule by DVOA. Who have the 49ers faced? They faced the number one DVOA team in the Seahawks. They have faced the 7th ranked DVOA team in the Jaguars. Yes, they're 7. We'll talk about that more. They have faced the 19th ranked DVOA team in Arizona and the 31st in New Orleans. So they have faced two top 10 DVOA teams through 4 weeks. Now, when you look at the future, the Cardinals have the third toughest schedule to go. The Rams have the fourth toughest schedule. This is overall in the NFL. The Seahawks have the seventh toughest schedule. So they have an easier schedule than either the Rams or the Cardinals. And the 49ers have the 18th hardest. So the 49ers, it's going to flip. They have the easiest schedule the rest of the way in the NFC West. The Cardinals, Rams, and Seahawks are relatively similar. But if you look at some of the teams that maybe it looked like it was going to be a really hard game for the Rams, like the Ravens, that doesn't look quite as intimidating as it did not so long ago. That defense looks like a mess. All the Ravens fans are dying for Mike McDonald to come back and save them. So, I mean, the Ravens are still 14th overall, but their defense is 26th in DVOA. So, I mean, the Rams do have tough games left regardless. But some of the games that I thought were going to be really tough don't look quite as tough. That Lions game certainly looks tough. But that Ravens game, not as. And they play the Bucks in late November, right around Thanksgiving. The Bucks should have Mike Evans back by then. They might have some of their offensive linemen back by then. Chris Godwin, some of the other things might start to turn for the Bucks by then. So that might be a tougher game then than it is now. But I mean, that Ravens thing looks a lot different than it did. But let's talk about the Seahawks schedule. Let's talk about the Seahawks schedule. I'll put it up here. We'll look at it together. All right. And which view do I want to use? Is this a decent view? Sure. Why not? We'll use this view. So I'll share my screen. You guys can watch this with me. And there we go. All right. Let's put this up. So that is not what I planned to do. All right. Sorry, guys. There is the schedule. And let's see if I can make this happen that I was trying to do before. There we go. All right. So the Seahawks have Tampa Bay next, at Jacksonville, home against Houston, and then they have a bye week. So let's start there. All right. Let's start there. Sorry, I'm trying to find a way I can have this up here without being in the way of the chat. So here, let me pull this over a little bit. Let's see if that works. All right, here we go. All right, so Tampa Bay, we just talked about, is been really impressive from an offensive standpoint, at least if you've watched them with Baker Mayfield. But the interesting thing with Tampa Bay, who, by the way, is the 18th overall DVOA team, is their offense ranks 17th by DVOA. It's their defense that ranks 9th. And this is kind of going to be a trend as I talk about this more. You've got, I think, a tougher slate of defenses that you're going to be facing as a Seahawks team than offenses. To give you an idea, the Seahawks will face the Rams twice. They are the second ranked DVOA offense. The Colts, the third ranked. The 49ers, the 9th ranked. And the Commanders are the 10th ranked. So that is five games left against top 10 DVOA offenses. Meanwhile, they're going to play the 14th ranked Jags, the 17th ranked Bucks, the 20th ranked Texans, the 23rd ranked Cardinals, the 28th ranked Panthers, the 30th ranked Vikings, and the 32nd ranked Titans. to me, this defense should be in position to end the year as the number one DVOA defense and maybe the number one scoring defense. I think with the low bottom feeder offenses that they're going to go against, I think they can put up some pretty gaudy numbers. I don't think the Seahawks are going to have to score a lot of points in a lot of these games to win. Again, you've got 3, 6, 8 games against teams ranked 14th or worse on offense by DVOA. All right, but then you switch it around and you look at the defenses that the Seahawks are going to play. They're going to face they're going to face 6 top 10 defenses and the 12th ranked defense. And so that's, if you want to put it as like 7 of their final games, what would it be? Their final 13 games, over half their final games are going to be against top 12 defenses. To this point, the best defense that they have faced is the 49ers at 12th. So they haven't faced, other than the 49ers, they have not faced a defense that has been that tough. Now, you can say, well, what was the defense ranked before the Seahawks played them? Because the Seahawks offense has been really good, and that's part of why these defenses have suffered. That's fair. But just telling you how it is, they have not faced juggernaut defenses so far, which also could be contributing to why the offense's numbers have been so positive. Depends on how you want to look at it. And then as far as like kind of patsy defenses, there's some. The Texans are 15th. Any of you feel like that's an easy defense to play, even though the results haven't been great so far? You still got Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter and Derek Stingley and. Like, I don't know that I'd look at the Texans as an easy defense to play. The Cardinals, who the Seahawks just played, and we've seen, like, that's a decent defense, and they'll get some guys back. They're going to get, at some point, their top draft pick, Walter Nolan, on the defensive line, who I think could be a really good player. They'll get Will Johnson back, who looks like a good corner. They should get back, you know, some other players that could make that defense even better. So I don't think that's a cakewalk. The Commanders defense, 18th, I think is not good. The Colts defense at 19th, also not great. The Panthers are 21st, and the Titans are 29th. So if you look at it, the Seahawks offense only has 4 games left against teams that are in the bottom half of the NFL in defensive DVOA. It's not a lot. The Seahawks defense has 7 games left against teams in the bottom half of offensive DVOA. So the Seahawks defense should have an easier slate than the Seahawks offense. But if I was to ask you, like, okay, let's look at the Seahawks schedule, and let's set aside the divisional games for a second. We'll set aside Los Angeles. We'll set aside San Francisco. We'll set aside the Cardinals. With that in mind, like, what's the toughest game left on the Seahawks schedule outside of the division? You could make an argument it is the Tampa Bay Bucks, who are coming to town this week. If they had Mike Evans, if they had Kalijah Kancey, if they had their offensive line, Luke Getteke, Cody Mauch, like, if they had some of those guys, that might be it. Other contenders for toughest game left on the Seahawks schedule, didn't expect to say it, the Jacksonville Jaguars. And if you want to just go purely by DVOA, purely want to go by DVOA, and you might not, but I'm just using that as a proxy for now. The toughest opponent outside of the division is the Indianapolis Colts, who are fourth in DVOA. Somehow, the Washington Commanders are fifth. I don't know. We'll come back to that one. But the Jacksonville Jaguars are seventh. Those are the only top 10 DVOA opponents the Seahawks face the rest of the year outside of the division, right? And honestly, the Rams are third. You play them twice. So I don't think there's any question to me that's your toughest set of games you've got left on the schedule. But I'm more interested in what about outside the division? And one of the things I think people don't understand about the Jags is because they've got Liam Cohen, who's an offensive coach, Trevor Lawrence, and then, you know, you've got Brian Thomas Jr. and Travis Etienne, and you kind of think about them offensively. Well, they're the 14th ranked DVOA offense. They're the third ranked DVOA defense. And you're going to be playing in Jacksonville at 10 a.m. Now, that hasn't been an issue for a while. The Seahawks have done well on the road, but that's a tough one. That's a tougher one than I would have thought. Like, it's meaningfully tough, more tough than I thought it was to start the season. So I think the Jags game looks a lot harder than it did to start the year. I think the Bucs game looks a little easier, but not a lot, because I just feel like Baker Mayfield has been playing at such a high level and willing his team to victories or very close losses. I think that that team's just a tough out. I would not overlook the Bucs in any way, shape, or form. The Colts? I don't know. What do you guys make of the Colts? I love the Indiana Jones nickname for Daniel Jones. That is brilliant. It's awesome. So I give them credit. He looked, for the most part, okay. He threw a couple picks yesterday, as he tends to do. I don't think he's much different than the player he has been. Jonathan Taylor's an excellent running back. But the thing with the Colts is their offense is the third-ranked offense. The defense is 19th. And I just think the Seahawks at home are going to put up points against the Colts. And if you were to ask me, do I feel better about the Seahawks' chances of scoring against the Colts or the Colts' chances of scoring, against the Seahawks? It's really not a question. I feel a lot better about the Seahawks' chances of scoring against that defense. So for me, even though the Colts have the highest ranked DVOA team outside the division the Seahawks will play, I think that's a win. I don't think it's an easy win, but I'd expect the Seahawks to win that game. The Commanders, that is bizarre to me that they are the fifth ranked DVOA team. 10th ranked offense, 18th ranked defense, number one ranked special teams. So that maybe explains it. They're being artificially lifted a bit by special teams play. They will have Jaden Daniels back almost certainly when the Seahawks go to face them, you know, after the bye week. But the Seahawks are going to be coming off of a bye week. And if you look at the Commanders game, like the Commanders schedule, let's take a look real quick. The Commanders will be playing at the Kansas City Chiefs on a Monday night the week before. So the Commanders are going to be playing a primetime game against an opponent that everyone knows they're going to be giving their all. And then they fly back home for a short week to face the Seahawks on Sunday Night Football. So they get a shorter week, just like any, like they get 6 days instead of seven. Not only the Seahawks not have that, they've got coming off a bye week. So the Seahawks are going to have 2 weeks of rest. Mike McDonald, Clint Kubiak being able to watch the Commanders play against the Chiefs, game plan to their heart's content, done with self-scouting of the first part of the season. I'm not like, I don't think that Commanders game is, I would have picked that as the toughest non-divisional game going into this season. I wouldn't now. I wouldn't. So I think that game becomes easier. I'll also point out that Jaguars game that I do think might be the toughest. The Jaguars also are going to be coming off playing a Monday night game against the Chiefs. It's going to be in Jacksonville, so they won't be traveling, but that's going to be an emotionally charged game in conference against the big bad Chiefs. And then they're going to have short rest to play the Seahawks. I think that is a benefit or advantage for Seattle. I mean, what are the other games that show up on the schedule where you say outside of the division, that's a tough game? Houston, we would have thought, could have been one of the tougher games, and maybe it still will be. But that offensive line is a disaster. It is the level of what their offensive line was last year, which, by the way, was the worst, was worse than the Seahawks offensive line. So that's a game that, to me, I worry about a little bit, because that defense has enough playmakers to potentially challenge the Seahawks offensive line and the Seahawks offense. And you've got to figure out if the Seahawks defense can, you know, dominate enough against CJ Stroud. Now, if you look at what the Texans have done so far offensively, I mean, they've scored 9 points, 19 points, 10 points, and then they finally scored 26 against the Tennessee Titans. So the only time they scored more than, or 20 points or more, was against maybe the worst team in football. So that's also the only game they've had more than 270 yards of offense. So it's like, do I really think that the Texans are a team you should be scared of? I don't. Certainly not scared of the Titans. The Vikings, yes, they're missing J.J. McCarthy, but J.J. McCarthy's been really bad and caused a lot of problems. And their offensive line has had trouble pass protecting, partially because the quarterbacks have made it hard to pass protect. I think the defense is still good, but that defense also gave up 24 points to a Steelers team that I think has a really crappy offense. Like, you should not be giving up a lot of points to Aaron Rodgers and that offensive line. And they didn't have Jalen Warren. Like, they gave up 131 yards rushing to the Steelers team. The Steelers, let's take a quick look. The Steelers had not had more than 72 yards rushing on the year in any game. They gave up, they got 131 against the Vikings. It's not great. And then it's also worth noting that the Vikings, that's not the only time they've had trouble with run defense. They gave up 218 yards rushing to Atlanta. They gave up 120 to the Bears. The only team they've held under 120 yards rushing was the Bengals. So, Vikings, I mean, at home, I don't think that's that scary. I think another game that's worth at least discussing is the Atlanta Falcons game. That is in Atlanta. That is going to be, I think, continuing to be a really good offense. Bijan Robinson is in the conversation for best offensive player in the NFL. Doesn't mean he's going to win it, but that guy is an absolute threat. Every time he touches the ball, passing or receiving, running, he is just a great player. Drake London has been a great receiver. Even Kyle Pitts has started to emerge. Michael Penix had a big bounce back game yesterday. So I think that offense is pretty good. The defense, this is the surprise. I would bet nobody knows this. Atlanta Falcons have the fourth ranked DVOA defense in the NFL. Would you have guessed that? I was shocked. I was shocked when I saw that. And if you look at points allowed per game, where do they rank? They rank 14th, which is not that high. Yards per play, where do they rank? They rank 7th. They rank 7th in yards per play. Who have they played? Let's take a look at that. So the Falcons have played the Bucks, barely lost, and should have either won or been tied going into overtime without a missed field goal. They barely lost that game. They played the Vikings in Minnesota. They played the Panthers. That is the bizarro game. They lost 30-0 to the Panthers. Like, that is just a weird game. And then they beat the Commanders 34-27. They put up 435 yards of offense. But defensively, they have not given up 300 yards in a game yet. And they have not given up more than 17 first downs in a game, which is pretty good. If you look at yards per drive, they're 4th in the NFL in yards per drive. They're 11th in the NFL in points per drive allowed. So I'm curious. I'm actually going to look up from a pressure perspective where they are, because they invested in getting more pass rush. I don't know if that's actually panning out for them or not. One sec. Let me look up pressure rate real quick. We're going to look at defense and we're going to look up pressure rates. And where do the Falcons rank? They're 8th. They are right behind the Seahawks in pressure rate. And they have a better sack rate. So the investments that they've made on the pass rush for the defensive side and Jalen Walker and James Pierce, I think those things are looking promising for them. That game might be rough for the Seahawks. They're going to be coming off a home game against Minnesota. They'll be traveling to Atlanta, 10 a.m. game again. They did really well there last year. But that's a team that can put up points, has a guy that is very hard to sack in Michael Penix. He gets rid of the ball very quickly. That could be one of the tougher games left on the schedule outside the division. You got home against the Colts. We talked about that already. Then you've got, you've got the two Los Angeles games. You got at Carolina, at San Francisco. I'll probably regret it at some point, but I don't see the 49ers as this big, bad team that you've got to figure out how you're going to beat. They can get back George Kittle. They can get back Malik Mustafa. They can get back Brandon Ayuk. I still think that the Seahawks should win that game down in Santa Clara. So, yeah. I'm curious, with all that information, where do you guys see the toughest game outside the division remaining on the Seahawks schedule? For me, I think it might be the Jags game. It's between the Jags and the Bucks, I guess. And I'll dive more into both teams over the next couple of weeks and have a better feel for it. But the Bucks team feels like a higher ceiling team overall. But I think the Jaguars defense is very underrated, and that's on the road. It's a long trip to get there. The fact that they're coming off a short week against, there will be a short week against the Chiefs, alleviates some of that. I think I'd probably say the Bucks game feels like the toughest non-divisional game remaining. And that's coming up this weekend, and it's a team that is going to be as beat up as they probably will be the rest of the season. So it's a game you get at home. I think the Seahawks have every reason to think they can win it. Of course, I will do my research and come back with a more informed opinion, but that's just based on watching them play and watching the Seahawks play. So it's interesting, because if I look at all the games, Tampa Bay looks like an easier game than it was going to be because of the injuries, Kalijah Kancey out, Gedeki, their right tackle out, Cody Mauch, their guard out, Mike Evans out. Like, there's a lot of really quality players that are missing from that Bucs team. So I think that looks a little easier than it did to start the season. The Jaguars game looks tougher. I would say much tougher than I thought it was going to be to start the season. The Houston game looks easier. Close to saying much easier, but that defense, I think, is still a quality defense, even though, you know, it's not doing so well so far. The Washington game looks, I think, a lot easier, even when Jaden Daniels comes back. Arizona, easier. The Rams, tougher. You got two against the Rams. I think the Rams look like absolute contenders. And I know that they lost to the Eagles and they, should have lost to the Colts. They don't really have an impressive win so far, to be honest. If I look at what the Rams have done, they beat the Texans by 5 points at home. They beat the Titans by 14 points in Tennessee, but that was a close game. But I thought they should have beat the Eagles. They looked like a way better team. And you had two blocked field goals deciding that game. That's pretty random. And they should have lost to the Colts, but they didn't. But I just look at the way they're playing and the offense with Matt Stafford and the way Davante Adams and Puka Nacua are teaming up, the way Kyren Williams, the way their run blocking is going on, that looks like a very good team. The pass rush is as good as advertised. And they have some weaknesses in the secondary, but their safeties are also playing pretty darn well. So that team looks to me to be absolutely in the conversation for top of the NFC. You got two games left against them. Titans, I didn't think that was going to be a hard game. It looks like it could be even easier than expected. Minnesota looks like an easier game than probably expected. Atlanta, about what I expected. The defense being good is different, so maybe that's a little harder. The Colts is definitely harder than expected. I still think the Seahawks would be probably favored in that game. Carolina looks easier. And I think the 49ers look about the same. So I think that the schedule for the Seahawks, in my opinion, has lightened up a little bit. But proof will be in how it plays. And I think the Seahawks look better than expected in the sense that this passing offense is significantly better than anyone could have predicted. I just don't believe anyone could have predicted Sam Darnold would be operating at this level. Clint Kubiak, Jackson Smith and Jigba. People are going to say, "Ah, I predicted it." Sure, go ahead, enjoy that. But I don't think most people would have, with good evidence and good thought process, could have predicted the passing offense would have been this good. So I love that, like, 50% of the comments in chat are about the mustache. So that means it's working. Good luck to the Mariners for sure coming up here this weekend. Let's get some super chats out here. Matt Greger says, shout out to your excellent work on families living with disabilities, disabled adults. It's how I found your blog in the first place a decade ago. Thank you. Well, thanks, Matt. That was really nice of you. And yeah, if you're curious, my wife, Rachel, and I put out another podcast. It's called the Nemhouse Podcast, NEMHOUSE. And it's free and it's up on patreon.com/Nemhouse. And we are doing our second season. And this season we're talking about our son, who is 21, is going to be transitioning into adult life with school ending in June of this year, next year, I should say. And that's a really challenging transition. You stop getting any support for how your day's going to work. And it's tough for a lot of parents. And so thankfully my wife works in that field and she and I are coming up with our plan of how we're going to transition. And we're sharing our conversations that are not pre-scripted. We're just going through and figuring out our plan. And we're putting it on the podcast, hopefully in the idea that it'll help other families that are in the having those situations, as well as honestly my older son, who one day might be able to look back and listen to this season and these episodes and have a better feel for how all this works when we're gone. So he has some of that information to lean on. Anyway, appreciate it, Matt, and cheers to you. Kay Soon Soon says, will Seattle adopt the knuckle kickoff like the Rams? The Seahawks have already done it. How do you think the ball in Pittsburgh bounced over the head of their returner and ended up being a George Halani touchdown? That was a knuckleball kick that landed in the kicking zone and bounced over his head. They don't do it all the time. And part of the reason they don't do it all the time is, did you see what happened in the last Seahawks game when the Cardinals tried to do one of those? Didn't hit the landing zone and gave the Seahawks the possession at the 40-yard line. So it is a high-risk, high-reward thing. If you get very good at it, it's really an advantage. But it's also a risk. So, yes, they are doing it. Some teams are better at it than others. Will Fries says, the other day I said we lack an offensive closer. What I should have said is that we don't have a run game to milk the clock with a lead on offense at the end of games, and it's hurt us and it's concerning. I see. That makes more sense because Sam Darnold and Jackson Smith and Jigba have been two of the best closers in football so far. But yeah, you would like to have a run game that you can rely on to help get to 4-minute offense and bleed the clock. And they haven't done that. That's, to me, that is the least of my worries, is the 4-minute offense. I want the run offense to be good in the first 4 minutes as much as I want it to be good in the last 4 minutes. And one of the things I talked to all of you about that proved to be true last week, shout out to Tale of the Tape, shout out to First Look. If you're listening and reading hawkblogger.com and listening to that episode of the show, I told you that the Seahawks have faced the highest stacked box rate in the NFL because, not just because teams are thinking they have to stack the box to stop the run, but because the Seahawks have been playing a ton of 21 and 12 personnel, which often brings an extra guy into the box, either having an extra a fullback or having two tight ends. By doing that, it's opened up the pass game. Now, what I haven't looked at, let's look at it right now. I have a second, and I'm curious because I haven't had a chance to see it. The Cardinals coming into that game were one of the lowest stacked box rate teams in the NFL. So one of the questions I had was, is that just something the Seahawks are causing, or is it a game plan that opponents have against them? And if we look at run defense and we look at stacked boxes, interesting. Yes. So the Cardinals were the third highest stacked box rate team in the NFL in week four, 40%. And if we go to their normal, this is starting to be a very big storyline, by the way, guys. If we go to the full season, the Cardinals, they had ranked, I think, 23rd in stacked box rate, or maybe it was 18th in stacked box rate before this game. So you're getting a team that doesn't stack the box. Like, for example, week three, their stacked box rate was 25%. In week two, the Cardinals' stacked box rank was 10.5%. And in week one, their stacked box rate was, let's see, where is it? 18%. So the highest before facing Seattle was 25%. They were at 40% against the Seahawks. So the Seahawks played a ton of 12 and 13 personnel, which brings extra defenders toward the box and opens up the pass game. Now, the big thing there is, let's look at pass offense. And we're going to look at pass offense when there is a stacked box. I don't know if I actually have the ability to don't think I do have the ability to look at how the passing is doing on stacked boxes. But let's look at EPA per play against stacked boxes, 8+ defenders. Does it give me, darn it. It does not give me what I'm looking for. Too bad. I could tell you for sure the Seahawks are doing really well in those situations. And one of the ways I can tell you that is since week two, the Seahawks have the number one EPA per dropback on early downs in the NFL. Number one. So they are getting these stack boxes. They are passing over them. Now, the question is going to be, do teams against this heavy personnel stop bringing extra guys into the box? Because if they do, the Seahawks run game should open up. But for right now, I think you're getting a lot of defenses in uncomfortable situations where they've got a lot of guys near the line of scrimmage and their secondaries have not been able to hold up against Sam Darnold and against Jackson Smith and Jigba and the passing game in general. So this might be, to use a Mike McDonald phrase, a cost of doing business. The run game going against extra defenders near the line of scrimmage each and every week is going to make it probably harder for them to be one of the best run teams in the NFL. But it also is getting them a lot of practice against running against those things. And if they get some light boxes, you should hopefully start to see the run game start to open up a little bit more. If you guys have not downloaded the Sleeper app, I highly recommend it. It's a great app. You can get all sorts of visualizations and hang out with your favorite friends and talk about Mariners, Seahawks, whatever you want. Check this out. That's right. Use code Hawks. Get up to $100 match on your first deposit. Terms and conditions apply. See Sleeper's terms of use for details. Currently operational in over 25 states. Check out Sleeper today. We've got some comments I got to read here. This comes from Quarters Only, who's a member, says, is Brian going to start coaching Little League Baseball? I think this is a Stash reference. I saw another one here. Where was it? There's a few mustache comments. Is Brian a small offensive lineman? I guess we'll see how the guys feel when I see them at the VMAC today. Nice Mariners stash. Thank you. Hopefully you guys all join. Stash Life from Dimas Recon. The Cop Stash. Laugh out loud. It's what it's going to be, guys. So get used to it. All right. So last thing I want to talk about is this Thursday night game. Who are we rooting for? 49ers or Rams? I'm actually going to put a poll in chat because I'm curious what your answer will be. Let me create a quick poll. Who are you rooting for on Thursday night football? And we're going to put 49ers, Rams. All right. So there's your option. Here's the thing for me. I feel like the 49ers have the easiest remaining schedule, so a loss would be good there. The Rams are the best team. Like, to me, it's not even close. The Rams are a better team. So getting the Rams to lose a divisional game would be good, but it would also make the 49ers 3-0 in the division, which is not good. This game is played in LA, I believe. Let me double check this. It is played in LA. Not that that matters. I don't know. I guess the logical thing would be to root for the Rams so that the 49ers lose a divisional game. You've got two games left against the Rams, and you control your destiny a little bit more against the Rams. So I think it probably makes most logical sense to root for the 49ers in that game. That is never a comfortable thing for me ever. But I think that's probably the case. I also kind of think the Rams are just going to roll them. Now, that said, I thought the Rams were going to roll the Colts. And they definitely did not. So we'll find out soon enough about that team. We'll be hate watching it for sure on Thursday. That'll be fun. And it looks like, based off the initial poll results, 62/3 of you say agree. 49ers is who you think you're going to root for on Thursday. All right, everybody. I will be down at the VMAC later today for practice. I think that we're expecting to get Nicky Minwori back this week. We'll see what's going on with other. We'll get some idea of injury situation. Mike McDonald will have his press conference later. I think it's around 4:00 today, and we'll have any injury updates there. We do have the report of Reek Woolen potentially being on the trade block. I think that's something to watch, and I wouldn't be surprised if something happens sooner rather than later there. Not many like the next couple days, but it wouldn't shock me if something happens relatively soon there, because if the Seahawks have decided that they're ready to move on from him, they're not going to want to keep him around. And one of the things to really be aware of about why this might happen sooner rather than later is with Nicky Minwori coming back. Every time Nicky Minwori is on the field, Reek Woolen's going to be off the field. How do I know that? Because during the Cardinals game, every time DeAnthony Bell came on the field for the defense, Reek Woolen went off the field. DeAnthony Bell was playing the Nick Emanwori big nickel role. They are not using that defensive package nearly as much without Nick Emanwori. With him, that could be their most common defensive package, which would mean a pretty drastic reduction in Reek Woolen's snap count, with Josh Jobe and Devin Witherspoon being the outside corners when Emanwori is playing big nickel. It's a big deal. Now, beyond that, there's also a chance that Darian Kendrick is going to start challenging Reek Woolen for the third cornerback spot. So there's a chance even when they go with Devin Witherspoon at nickel, they might eat into Reek Woolen's snaps in that situation. So he might not be playing that much anymore. I have my opinions about whether that's a good idea or not. I've talked about it before. I'll talk about it again. I'm just telling you, purely from an analytical standpoint, Nicky Minwori coming back signals that Reek Woolen's going to play a lot less. And I think that's going to mean they're going to want to potentially have him outside that locker and into another locker room sooner rather than later. So keep an eye on that. All right, everybody. Appreciate you tuning in. Thanks for putting up with the stash. Get used to it. My wife will never get used to it, but it's here. It's here for the playoffs. Go Mariners. I'll have more for you about the Mariners coming up. Got hopefully some exciting announcements. But for now, have a great rest of your Monday. I'm Brian Nemhauser. This has been another episode of Hawk Blogger Mornings. Take care.